You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
In to a new and suddenly very busy week here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. The Rockets are 2-0 in the Las Vegas Summer League after wins Friday and Sunday over the Pacers and Warriors, but I know that's the last thing on everyone's minds at the moment. We'll get to that in the third segment. To lead off, let's discuss the free agency news and rumors, both good and bad. Since we last spoke Friday, that's when we learned that the Thunder were going to release Carmelo Anthony, and it did not take a genius to put two and two together and see that the Rockets would be a leading contender for his services. Those rumors have only picked up this weekend. But now, in addition to luring Carmelo, even if that's an inevitability and it's not quite to the finish line yet, the Rockets now have more holes to fill beyond just adding a replacement for Trevor Ariza, because Luke Baamute, in a move reported Monday afternoon by Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, going to the LA Clippers on a one-year, $4.3 million deal. So even if the Rockets are able to add Carmelo Anthony, who certainly is a defensive drop-off from Trevor Ariza, but does give you more offensive potential as a scorer, at one point led the NBA in scoring a few years back, and even at 34 years old, still a much more talented scorer than anyone the Rockets had at the forward spots this past season, very close with Chris Paul. There's a defensive drop-off to begin with, and now losing two wings, a 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony, even if the Rockets are able to get that done, is not going to be all that it takes to replace what you lost for a team that's said is all about running it back and trying to, again, do what they did last year, win 65 games, take the top seed in the West, and get a shot in the Western Conference Finals against the Golden State Warriors. Personally, I'm more optimistic on Carmelo than a lot, based on the confidence in Chris Paul and Mike D'Antoni in him. Each knows him quite well. The structure relative to Billy Donovan and Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City, I think it puts him in a better position to succeed. I think the Rockets switching a lot defensively actually plays to Melo's strengths. He's certainly got to be a good defensive player, but I think it mitigates his weaknesses just a little bit. Analytics show that he grades out as a fairly average guy when it comes to switching situations. But even if we give Carmelo the benefit of the doubt, offensively, in terms of accepting the role, we know his gifts, but will he accept being the number three option or potentially even a sixth man off the bench? Will he be passable defensively? Even if we give Carmelo that benefit of the doubt, between losing Luke Baamute and Trevor Ariza, that's over 20% of your minutes when everyone was healthy last year. The team that went 65-17, I look at it from the standpoint of 240 minutes per night. There's 48 minutes at each of the five positions, and even when everybody was healthy, you're looking at over 50 of those taken up by Trevor Ariza and Luke Baamute. So that's a lot to fill, and even if Carmelo Anthony works out, there are other moves the Rockets need to make. Now, I do think they're going to be able to make them. I think between having your future first-round picks, between the Ryan Anderson contract, which can be used to fill salary in deals, you might have to take an overpay. You can look at someone like a Kent Bazemore in Atlanta, a Courtney Lee in New York, or someone off the grid. Maybe you also get a bargain for the minimum, the same way the Rockets did on July 19th last year with Luke Baamute. But certainly it is a loss losing to very good defensive forwards in Trevor Ariza and Luke Baamute. Ultimately, as it turned out, it was about the money. And that's what I'm going to lead with, the economics of the situation. We'll talk more about the basketball loss in segment two, because I don't want to go too deep into the X's and O's of basketball just yet, because it's July 9th. There are a ton of other moves that can and will be made by the Rockets this offseason. I want to lead with the finances, because to me, that's the most interesting part of this deal, and I think it's also the most misunderstood, judging by the early reactions on Twitter. As I've explained for the last week or so here at Locked In Rockets, it seemed pretty clear that the Rockets were not offering Luke Baamute their mid-level exception. Because Baamute signed as a relative bargain at the minimum last year, great find by Daryl Morey. So, by the way, if you're ripping Daryl Morey, keep in mind that the only reason you were in a position to lose Luke Baamute is because of how great he was at finding him a year ago. Maybe the same thing happens again. Daryl is very good at his job, as evidenced by his winning Executive of the Year at the NBA Awards just last week, as voted on by his peers. But because he signed for the minimum and was only with the Rockets for 1 year, the Rockets did not have any sort of bird rights on Luke Bamute. They essentially could just offer him his prior year contract, which is the veteran minimum, the non-bird tender, which is 120%, that would have been about $2.9 million, or they could have used their MLE, which is about $5.3 million. Ultimately, I think it's clear that Bamute wanted the mid-level exception, and it would have come close. Maybe they wouldn't have used all the mid-level exception. They could have saved a little bit for DeAnthony Melton, the second-round pick out of USC that hasn't signed yet. But ultimately, I think he wanted the MLE. The Rockets wouldn't give it to him, and perhaps also feeling like he gave him a bit of a discount last year, Luke went to the Clippers, where I think he felt more appreciated. Now, I think it's unfortunate because the Clippers, they're not going to have his bird rights next summer either. If Bamute had stayed with the Rockets, they would have had his early bird rights next summer and could have paid him as much as $9 million a year and exceeded the cap to do so. The Clippers, even at signing him at $4.3 million, will only be able to sign him at just over $5 million a year because they're going to be in the same position next year that the Rockets were in right now. So it's a curious move to me from the standpoint of Luke's finances, but ultimately my guess is that Luke wasn't willing to wait a year. I think, as it often happens in free agency, egos and feelings got involved. And I've said over the past week not to worry about it with Clint Capella. Well, that's because he's restricted. There aren't that many options he has other than taking the qualifying offer. Unfortunately, I don't think we're anywhere close to that as we speak on July 9th. With Luke and unrestricted free agents, sometimes feelings come into play. And even though the Rockets probably could have paid him more than the Clippers long term, Luke didn't want to wait. He felt like he wanted that mid-level exception money now. And when the Rockets didn't give it to him, I think he wanted to go somewhere else where there was a greater sense of appreciation. And these guys are human beings. Sometimes that happens. And I'm not going to begrudge him for that. Maybe also after a season in which he dislocated his shoulder twice, maybe he didn't want to wait a year for a little bit more money. Maybe he wanted the absolute most money in year one out of injury concerns. And if that's the case, I can't blame him for that either. That said, what needs to be clear is that this was not a financial decision from the Rockets from the standpoint of them going cheap. You might could argue that with Trevor Ariza, although I think that had more to do with timing. More on Trevor in a moment, because I think the loss of Trevor and the loss of Luke are interrelated, especially in terms of the basketball impact. But with Luke, it's not like that because the Rockets didn't offer him that mid-level exception that they're just not going to spend it and that Tillman Fertitta, the new owner, is cheap and is just going to pocket it himself. No, they're most likely going to spend that mid-level exception on Carmelo Anthony. The reason is, by spending the mid-level exception on Carmelo Anthony, then they can exceed the mid-level exception to retain Carmelo next summer, assuming all goes well when he next enters free agency. If they had gotten Carmelo to take the veteran minimum, and I understand there's a case to say, well, Carmelo's getting bought out for $20-plus million in Oklahoma City whenever that inevitably happens, why can't he sign for the minimum and give the mid-level exception to Luke and have both of those guys? That sounds great in theory. The problem is that next summer, you'd be walking into the same situation with Carmelo Anthony that you're in right now with Luke, which is that it's not easy to keep him, if not impossible, based on the limited resources you have, other than potentially spending the mid-level exception. And then if you spend the mid-level exception, you can't use it on anybody else. So ultimately, even though Carmelo might play for less than the mid-level exception right now, it would greatly reduce your chances of keeping a team together if it works out. And my guess is that the Rockets feel that it will work out with Carmelo. There's a reason they pursued him so much last summer. And according to many reports today, including Adrian Wojnarowski, who says the Rockets are determined to land Carmelo, and Jonathan Fagan, the Houston Chronicle, who says there's growing optimism that the Rockets will be able to complete that deal. If the Rockets are serious about Carmelo and believe he will fit, and as mentioned earlier, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, you need to be able to keep him for more than 1 year. And even if you were willing to give Carmelo your MLE next summer, well, A, it's not a leg up from any other contender who could also give him the MLE and would probably do so in a heartbeat if he succeeds in Houston. But in addition to that, you're preventing your ability to use your MLE elsewhere to upgrade your team. All for a player, Luke Bamute, who's coming off of two dislocated shoulders, well, the same shoulder dislocated twice, and is going to be 32 years old next season. So I think it's misguided to look at this through the prism of Tillman Fertitta going cheap, because the money is going to get spent regardless. It's just a matter of planning your future allocation, and ultimately I think the Rockets were gambling that cooler heads would prevail and that Luke would bet on him getting that deal next summer when the Rockets have his early bird rights and can exceed the cap to give him up to $9 million per year. Unfortunately, Luke wasn't willing to do that. Ultimately, though, I don't think the Rockets were that floored because, look, when you have a guy who you can only offer either the minimum or 120% above the minimum and he plays as well as Bamute did at times this past season, I don't think the Rockets are completely floored. I think they're disappointed, but I don't think it's something that they're just completely caught off guard for without a plan to adjust to. Now, if you want to make the Fertitta argument related to Trevor Ariza, you could, because I said at the time, 1 year, $15 million, I don't think is all that extreme in the grand scheme. But my guess is that by it happening so quickly in the first hour of free agency, the Rockets were caught in a little bit of a time crunch, and that the offer to Ariza from the Suns, I'm guessing, was only on the table for a very short period of time, probably not even a day, and had he not taken it, they would have gone down their list to other options. And I think the Rockets, with it being the first 3 hours of free agency, chose to see what's behind door number two rather than commit their money right then and there. Now, in hindsight, with a lot of the market having dried up, the trade market is not done, let's be clear about that, but with a lot of the free agency market drying up, it's fair to question whether or not they should have been more aggressive with Ariza or just looking to straight up dump Ryan Anderson and use those savings to give Ariza what he wanted. It's easy to say that in hindsight, but when the decision was made, I don't think the Rockets knew for a fact that Luke was leaving, and I don't think they knew that some of the other free agents on the market wouldn't theoretically be available to them, or trade options for that matter. In short, while I think that money was a part of the equation, I'm not saying it speaks well in terms of being willing to spend at all costs, like apparently the Thunder have been, but obviously the Thunder spending is a little bit overdone, or else they wouldn't be cutting Carmelo Anthony for luxury tax-only reasons. But more than anything, I think the double whammy loss of Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute is more about timing than anything else. If Luke made the decision before Trevor, I think they would have been more aggressive in terms of potentially working to keep Trevor. Unfortunately, the stars didn't align. Maybe you can say the Rockets were too bullish on Luke having a cooler heads prevail moment. That's certainly fair to wonder, but I don't think this was really a money thing, at least today, because the money that would have gone to Luke is almost certainly going to go to Carmelo Anthony. And it's not a matter of saying that, well, the Rockets value Carmelo more than Luke, although I think they do, let's be real. Luke, yes, he was a good defender in the regular season. This is a guy who was not even in the playoff rotation by the end of it. But I don't think it's Carmelo versus Luke. It's your ability to retain both players next summer. Whereas if you had gotten Carmelo to sign for the minimum so that you could give the mid-level exception to Luke, you would have been waving goodbye to Carmelo next summer, or a small chance, I guess, you could have kept him with your MLE, and then you'd be waving goodbye to the MLE. So before we move on to the basketball, I just want to close out the contracts. It's a loss, but it's not a loss for the reasons that you're thinking. I don't think losing Luke Bamute speaks any more towards Rockets ownership's willingness to spend or anything else in regards to financial avenues to improve the team. I think it was, unfortunately, Luke making a decision that reflected on some combination of bruised feelings, egos, whatever you want to call it, and now the Rockets simply have to go down their list. Now, turning to the basketball side of the fence, we talked about this a little bit already in terms of why I actually think Carmelo is a pretty good fit, at least better than most seem to. I'm not saying that I'm without concerns. I'm not oblivious to what some of the advanced numbers show from Oklahoma City, but I think the Oklahoma City scenario, as Brian Geltzeiler, Hoops Critic, analyzed in our Friday show, it was a bit of a shotgun marriage from the start. Deal consummated on the eve of training camp. There was never a real plan for how to use him. I think Mike D'Antoni and Chris Paul much more able to put him in positions to succeed. The question now is not so much about Carmelo, although if somehow you lose him, then yeah, that would be especially devastating, but I'm hopeful that between the money available and Chris Paul to close the deal, that they'll be able to get that done. By the way, in addition to Adrian Wojnarowski and Jonathan Fagan's reports, both nationally and locally, I talked with someone last night after we saw the Rockets hanging out, CEO Tad Brown, GM Gerald Morey, head coach Mike D'Antoni, owner Tillman Fertitta, all hanging out with Bay Frazier, Carmelo Anthony's longtime business manager dating back to 2003 when he first turned pro. I know someone who is close with both Carmelo and Bay Frazier. Can't tell you guys who that is, but I spoke with him late last night after the Bay Frazier news came out, and this person is optimistic that the deal gets done between Carmelo and the Rockets. It's a little thing. I'm not reporting that source says it's done because this person is not involved in day-to-day negotiations at all. He's just someone that's aware of the two from a personal standpoint. And ultimately, at this point, that's the only thing that can derail the deal, is if LeBron wants to be in LA or Miami or somewhere like that for lifestyle reasons. Because clearly, Houston is the best basketball fit. He was comfortable with it last summer. He did a lot of homework on Chris Paul, Mike D'Antoni, this system, how he fits. There's an easy path to minutes, especially with Trevor Ariza and Luke Badmute both out now. Whereas with the Lakers, you have LeBron James, you have Brandon Ingram, you have Kyle Kuzma, you have the potential of trading for Kawhi Leonard. You have the fact that 34 years old, Carmelo's never won a title. Houston's clearly the best bet for him to do that. Certainly above LA, and clearly above Miami, which isn't even close, and is just seemingly spinning their wheels in mediocrity for the foreseeable future under Pat Riley. So be it about fit on the court, opportunity to win, leadership, all the basketball factors, and money for that matter, point to Houston. The only reason it would not get done is if there's something off court, the same way that everything made sense for LeBron James to go to Houston, but clearly his decision was much more about family, lifestyle, entertainment ventures, his home in LA, than what he let on in his public statements. I am aware that Carmelo has a well-known affinity for nightlife. He's got a home in LA. He's got a wife with various entertainment interests, so nothing is done until it's done. But if that were the case, it wouldn't be a basketball decision, and it would be a personal one. And after speaking with someone who knows both Melo and Bay, I'm comfortable that if it's a personal decision in which Houston isn't really at the front of Melo's list, I think this guy would have an inkling of it, and he does not. So personally, I'm pretty optimistic that the deal for Carmelo is going to get done, especially with the obvious need for the Rockets after losing not just Trevor Ariza, but Luke Badmute as well. Now, in terms of the basketball impact, I'm not as down on it from just a strict X's and O's standpoint. Even losing both Ariza and Badmute, the downside, you know, you're losing 50 minutes plus of 240 a game. That's a big loss for a team that won 65 games. That said, you're looking at average at best shooters, below it in Luke Badmute's case, and two players who Luke will be 32, Ariza is 33, with guys who are not appreciably above average shooters, and in Ariza's case, have already shown some slippage defensively in terms of their lateral quickness. It may not be a very pretty aging curve for those guys. We've heard inklings, really, since the season ended, the Rockets were interested in getting younger. These are two role players who are approaching their mid-30s. You'll take the gamble on Chris Paul, star. I think Daryl Morey is less willing to, not saying he wouldn't have any interest in them, but it has to be at the right price point to commit long-term to guys like Trevor Ariza and Luke Badmute. I think there's a good shot that at their ages, and with Luke coming off a pretty serious injury concern, it happened twice, the shoulder dislocation, and the last one, be it the physical pain, the resulting mental inability to go inside in traffic, or a combination of the two, he fell out of the rotation altogether, was pretty much unplayable after his return in the playoffs. I don't think it's a given that both Ariza and Luke Badmute, had they returned, would be these dynamic defenders next season. Father time is very real, especially for role players, and especially for role players with inconsistent jumpers. The Rockets found Luke Badmute for the minimum last summer. 3-and-D guys are generally undervalued around the league, and be it free agency, be it the trade market, looking to move Ryan Anderson for a contract. Mentioned Kent Bazemore, Courtney Lee as possibilities. I'm sure there's many others around the league as well. I think there's a chance that Daryl Morey can find the requisite role players. I think if there's one thing that Daryl Morey has shown you over and over again throughout his tenure in the NBA, it's that he can find role players out of nothing. What you worry about with Daryl is the same thing you worry about with any GM in the NBA, which is, are you top-heavy enough in an era with the Golden State Warriors and with Chris Paul, James Harden, and we presume Clint Capella, they have as good a shot as anyone there. So while it's a loss, it's July 9th. I'm not willing to go down the path of, well, where do they stand in the West if the season started today? Because the season doesn't start today. They are going to make moves, not just Carmelo, but they're going to either future bargain acquisitions at the minimum. Trades, yes, the Rockets have a defensive hole. They need more switchy wings, more three-point shooting. Folks, they're going to get it. And in some respects, they might even be better off long-term giving minutes to a younger player who could develop a little bit, as opposed to guys in Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, who at 33 and 32 may have already started their declines. I think we have seen some slippage from Ariza defensively, and with Luke, there are some clear health concerns coming off a twice dislocated shoulder. So in theory, you might could even raise your theoretical upside at those spots. But the concern is that you have lowered your floor. I understand the limitations of Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute. That's why I wanted to lead by discussing those, because I don't want to make it seem like they're better than they are. On paper, those are replaceable pieces, and Daryl Morey has a great track record for finding diamonds in the rough. The issue is that for the Rockets winning 65 games, it wasn't just about the talent last year. Yes, they had a talented roster, but I don't think they were head and shoulders better than the rest of the NBA. It was good, but part of what made them so special was the chemistry and how those pieces fit together. Now you are removing at least two players of the top eight, 20 to 25% of your overall minutes, and replacing them with who knows what. Now, granted, I think Daryl Morey has a good track record for finding guys that will be capably talented, but will the pieces fit as well as they did last year? That's a very real question. I don't think the Rockets lost any theoretical upside with these moves. In terms of competing with the Warriors, I mentioned bringing in Carmelo. I think it certainly raises your ceiling. It gives you more variance. I think that's important. I think you can easily mount an optimistic case to where Daryl Morey, between trades and bargains in the rough, can recoup from a talent perspective what they've lost in Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute. However, what they've lost in the locker room from a chemistry standpoint, can it be replaced? Yes. It's not the end of the world. But even if Daryl Morey makes the types of moves that I think he can to make you guys feel better about the roster on paper and how it fills out, we then have to see if the pieces work together as well as they did this past year. Because it's not a given. Look at the 2016 Rockets, the group that went 41-41, in which you added Ty Lawson to a team that largely was the same group that went to the Western Conference Finals. Everybody assumed that would be a 60-plus win, likely NBA title contender. Instead, it went the other way. So you could also argue, by the way, that that's an example of even if you bring back the same pieces, it's not necessarily guaranteed that they're going to fit together as well. So it's not that chemistry was guaranteed either way, but I think generally you certainly have a better shot if you bring back the guys that have already proven to mix well. And that, to me, is the biggest thing the Rockets are losing. For a basketball standpoint, Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, they're good defenders, but they're aging. I think Trevor in particular has already lost a step. They're average at best shooters. They're not really creators. I trust Daryl Morey to be able to replace those types of guys. I think even with limited resources in the trade market, he'll be able to do that. The question is whether the chemistry can be replaced nearly as easily. It's possible. That's why I'm not willing to say that the outlook, the ceiling has changed. No, there's still a very real case you can make to where the Rockets can be a championship contender this year and potentially even beat the Warriors. It's just that the floor, I don't think you can go into the season saying, well, we're guaranteed of winning 60 games or 65 or whatever you would have said before all the changes that have happened in the past month. Hopefully that doesn't happen. I trust the leadership of Mike D'Antoni and Chris Paul, but ultimately this does bring a little more variance to the Rockets, not just to the upside, but to the downside as well. And that, to me, the steadiness that you lose with Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute is where you're likely to feel it the most from a basketball standpoint. Now to close out, let's turn our attention to the Summer League. I feel bad shortchanging these guys because the Rockets are 2-0 through their first two games. They play their third later tonight against the Clippers. Then they'll go into, I believe, single elimination format, the tournament phase after these first three. I think they'll be seeded. So if the Rockets go 3-0, they'll be seeded pretty well. And it's a very talented team, as expected. It's just when you have the movement that they have elsewhere, Luke Bamute's departure, Carmelo Anthony's seemingly looming an imminent addition. Well, I shouldn't say imminent because it remains to be seen exactly when Oklahoma City is willing to set him free. Certainly the Summer League guys are a little bit of a back burner story because the odds are none of these guys are going to be significant contributors this year. I get it. I'm not oblivious to the common NBA sense there. That said, I think one reason that you might see teams let what they consider overpriced veterans go is because of their ability to replenish a pipeline of role players internally. That's something that Gerald Morey, on the balance of his 10-plus years in Houston, has done very well. It's slid away from that the past few years with how top-heavy the Rockets have been. The general idea is that rather than pay a Trevor Ariza $15 million a year at 33 years old, you want to be the team that develops a Trevor Ariza-type player, especially given the limited offense, internally. And I guess to that end, you have seen a couple of encouraging wing performances from the Rockets in summer league play. The win over Indiana on Friday, that's when you had Daniel House, who's out of Texas A&M, has played in the NBA with the Wizards and Suns, I believe, 20 points, 7-12 shooting, 3 of 7 from 3. Then the comeback win over the Warriors on Sunday night, that was really fun. Outscored him 35-14 in the fourth quarter to flip a 15-point deficit to a 6-point win. RJ Hunter, 24 points, 5 of 11 from behind the arc. So that's two wings that conceivably could be in your list of candidates for signing at bargain basement prices and hoping that one of those pans out. But I don't think the Rockets would be banking on them to be role players on a team that is projected to be a contender. That's all about running it back. I think that's more of a long-term play. To me, if there's a role that could be filled from this summer league team, it's that third center spot, really, I would say, option 2B, Clint Capela as your starter, and then Nene is 2A, but Nene is 36 years old. Maybe P.J. Tucker in there as well for a few minutes. But you had Tarik Black in that last year, and even when he did play, Black never fit as well as the Rockets thought he would when they signed him to that biannual exception deal last summer. Well, and they also tried Brandon Wright as a buyout candidate, but he wouldn't stay healthy. Well, in a perfect role, rather than allocate your funds to even a 10-plus year veteran's minimum contract, you'd be able to fill that role internally with young players, and that's where the Rockets are at their deepest. The big guy, the big story of Summer League thus far has been Isaiah Hartenstein, averaging 12 points and 9 boards per game, shooting nearly 50% from the field. Very intriguing big. He does have some semblance of a post game, but like most of the Rockets' bigs in the modern NBA, he tends to play face up. He can play in the perimeter. He can shoot all the way out there, but he's also able to take guys off the dribble. He's very nimble, very agile. Even though he's a big, he can take guys off the dribble. Many of his defenders at the five spot, not nearly as agile and light on their feet as Hartenstein is. So he's a bit of a unique big, and he also has pretty good vision. We've seen him when he drives and he finds a five that can't really pick him up one-on-one. Well, when he anticipates the help and he sees where it's coming from, he has good vision to know where his shooters are, where the help is coming from, where the openings are on the court. In general, the game just seems a lot slower to Hartenstein than it did this time a year ago, and it's not really that atypical. After getting a year with the Vipers, he just seems much more poised, and if you're able to fill that third center spot internally, then that's all the easier to focus what limited financial and trade resources you have on the wing spots to fill those Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute spots. So I'm very encouraged by what we've seen from Hartenstein, just a very all-around quality game, but he's not the only one. Jochi had 4 blocks and a couple of made threes against the Warriors. We also saw Jochi, by the way, the real Rockets, Chris Paul, James Harden, P.J. Tucker, and Eric Gordon played a scrimmage Saturday, as we saw on Instagram, courtesy of Gerald Morey and Irv Roland, against the Chinese national team. And with Clint Capela still in his contract negotiations, it wasn't Clint that was at the five. Instead, it was Jochi. So Jochi's with the Summer League some days, and he's on the Rockets other days with 4 starter-level players in Harden, Paul, Gordon, and P.J. Tucker. And Jochi, through 2 games, he's made, 4 of 6 threes? I mean, it's a small sample, but he's making threes. He's a shot-blocking presence. He hasn't done much on the low block, but if you have a shot-blocking presence and you can make threes and you have his wingspan, that's something to work with, especially considering how raw he was when he came a year ago. And then there's Chinonu Onuwaku, who, entering his 3rd year out of Louisville, it's a big year for him. You need to see some development. Well, last night, the game against the Warriors, Onuwaku was the guy who down the stretch sealed it up for you. He had the big block in the final minute of the game, but in just 15 minutes, 9 points, 6 boards, 4 of 6 shooting, and 2 blocks, he also showed you that, yes, he's capable of moving his feet and defending on the perimeter. And the thing is, between Jochi, Hartenstein, and Onuwaku, depending on what your need is, they give you different things. Onuwaku's a defensive guy. Jochi gives you the 3-point range and the shot blocking. With Hartenstein, it's more balance. But between those three, I think there's a case to where you don't necessarily have to go out and get a guy to hedge at a 36-year-old Nene as your backup center. I think you can fill that spot internally, and ultimately that goes a long way towards being able to use what limited resources you have to fill the forward spots rather than having to worry about the backup center depth chart, which some of us did going into the summer. Now, the guards, it's not that I'm looking over the smaller players. Now, of course, House and Hunter, they are 2-3, so you can throw them in the guard mix as well. But we've seen flashes as well from D'Anthony Melton, guard out of USC, and Trayvon Duval. It's just, with each, you're clearly a year or so away, and that's less sexy. A year, if not multiple years away, and that's just less sexy to talk about on a team like the Rockets that's built for the here and now. Duval, his first game looked fantastic, showed you why he was a top 10 recruit out of high school, 20 points, 7 of 10 shooting, had a quick burst off the dribble. Then the second game, he showed you why he went undrafted, 0 of 8 in his 17 minutes. And the weakness with Duval, it's his jump shot. To some extent, it's the same with D'Anthony Melton out of USC, went 3 of 15, I believe, in his debut against the Pacers Friday. Now, against the Warriors Sunday, he came around in a big way, 6 of 12 from the field, 2 of 5 from three-point range, so 50% overall, 40% from 3, 17 points, 5 boards. His defense was outstanding in both, but offensively, his shot still needs to be improved. He's still working on his mechanics. And the big thing with D'Anthony Melton, it's not just how young he is. Both Melton and Duval have played just 1 year of college ball. But with Melton, because of the NCAA investigation, he essentially has not played any sort of major basketball in 16 months. I know he's been working out. I know he's been through the combine. But it's not the same as meaningful games when other teams are scouting you and trying to stop you. So with Melton, it's just, in addition to being young and being working on his jump shot, yes, he's a very talented player. On paper, he could have been a lottery pick. But there's also just the sheer layoff that he's had at trying to knock off the rust and get back into competitive form. So you've seen some peaks from Duval out of Duke and Melton out of USC. That's nice to see. You've also seen some valleys. Rob Gray, unfortunately, out of Houston, hasn't gotten much time, tweaked his ankle. He potentially could be a contributor as well. But the bottom line is these guys, you're probably looking at more developmental plays there. And when you factor in, you have Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon already. I don't know how many minutes in terms of the small guard positions are really there for the taking anyway. It's nice to see that they're playing well. They give you glimpses of potential, and if you're the Rockets, you need all the cheap pieces that you can get long-term, given the luxury tax bills that are coming with this team. In general, though, we'll have more talk on the Summer League guys in the days ahead. I'm not oblivious to what's going on there. I'm happy they're 2-0. They have a chance to be 3-0 tonight. We'll see how that late-night game goes against the Clippers, but we'll have a lot more time for that in days ahead. I know tonight it's more about the here and now, the loss of Luke Bamute, the seemingly imminent addition of Carmelo Anthony, so wanted to spend most of our time tonight on those subjects. We'll talk more younger players in Summer League in the days ahead. For now, though, this is where I will leave it. If you want more content until the next time, as always, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget email, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Website at lockedonrockets.com. Always, you can ask me questions about the team, suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast. Don't hesitate to reach out. Also, if you are not subscribing to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you listen to your podcast, the odds are we're on there because of the great network of shows, including Locked On Texans and many other NBA and NFL teams across both leagues. Odds are we're on there, even some MLB as well, so we should have a good presence. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to your media, and you'll get breaking alerts whenever there's a new episode, whenever there's breaking news, just like there was today with the Luke Bamute signing. And if you would also be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review, that's how we can make the business model work, by looking attractive to potential clients and keeping this thing going as the most active podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, if you go to those platforms, that's an easy way for you to check out our archives. We didn't go too much into the Carmelo Anthony fit today. That's because we did a lot of that on Friday. If you didn't hear that show, check out our archives and you'll have more specific Carmelo talk and how I think he fits into this system in Houston alongside Chris Paul and James Harden. For now, though, we've gone on long enough. So much news and, well, only a limited time to discuss it. I'm sure we'll have more offsprings of this in the days ahead. So stay tuned here at Locked On Rockets and we will have you covered. For now, enjoy your evening.